This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
It's that time of year again. My schedule is packed with bracket-busting, three-point shooting, nonstop basketball action. I don't want to miss a second of it, and I find myself staying up late to catch all the action. I can't be dragging the next morning. That's why I go for a five-hour energy shot. They're perfect for my days packed with back-to-back games or when my favorite team is playing late. With over 15 flavors to choose from, like watermelon, tropical burst, blue raspberry, peach mango, and more, there's a flavor for everyone. On their website, you have the option to build your own 12-pack or 24-pack and have it delivered right to your door. And if you're out and about, you can always pick up a 5-hour energy shot at your local grocery or convenience store. They're everywhere. 5-Hour Energy keeps me going during the broadcast and the next morning when I need to get myself up and to work. Visit 5hourenergy.com for great deals and to stock up before the next tip-off.
What kind of programs does this school have? How are the test scores? How many kids do a classroom? Homes.com knows these are all things you ask when you're home shopping as a parent. That's why each listing on Homes.com includes extensive reports on local schools, including photos, parent reviews, test scores, student-teacher ratio, school rankings, and more. The information is from multiple trusted sources and curated by Homes.com's dedicated in-house research team. It's all so you can make the right decision for your family. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
Yeah, sure thing.
Hey, you sold that car yet?
Yeah, sold it to Carvana.
Oh, I thought you were selling to that guy.
The guy who wanted to pay me in foreign currency, no interest, over 36 months? Yeah, no. Carvana gave me an offer in minutes, picked it up, and paid me on the spot. It was so convenient.
Just like that?
Yeah.
No hassle?
None.
That is super convenient.
Sell your car to Carvana and swap hassle for convenience. Pickup fees may apply.
Welcome to another week of the best of Soccer Down Here AM on the SDH Network. John Nelson here with you, and it's great to be with you here on the Off the Woodwork section of the podcast. Elements here at 92.9 The Game, and great to be with you alongside you on the Odyssey app. As you make your choices on a weekly basis as to what you want to listen to and what you want to catch up on here in the world of soccer. This past week, another eventful week when it came to all of the news and notes and events to cover and events to talk about. And so what we wanted to do this time around is give you a bit of a sample size as to some of the guests that we have on a regular basis, and sometimes guests that we call upon when you have news that breaks and you want to go a little deeper when it comes to actual club analysis and market-by-market looks at how things go when it comes to the landscape of the sport of soccer. Part of that discussion comes from Atlanta United and their match week opponents. And we get to learn more about the opponents by talking to folks out of market. And one opportunity to do that was this past week with Laurel Failer from Queen City Press, one of our regular visitors on the SDH Network and SDHM, when we need to find out more about FC Cincinnati. With the matchup with Atlanta United, we knocked on Laurel's door. And here's part of our conversation involving absences, how things may look, and how the attack might go at TQL Stadium on the weekend. Here's our conversation, part of it, with Laurel Failer talking about FC Cincinnati and Atlanta United.
And obviously with Nodenke, that puts a big crimp in your offensive thought pattern, but obviously not as much at the back. What are you anticipating up top? In the Laurel Failer 4-2-3-1, how do you anticipate the 1 and the 3 now that we've talked about the 4?
Yeah, so I'm guessing Sergio Santos would start up top. I mean, they could go a 4-3-3 and play more with, like, they've got Yuya Kubo and Corey Baer that can also play forward or kind of as a winger. But if I'm sticking with the 4-2-3-1, I would think Sergio would be up top, and then you've got either Corey Baird or Yuya Kubo, and then Luca Orejano on those outside wings, and then Evander there in the middle. So that's the good thing. They do have Evander, their key player in the middle there that they would like to see, I think, get a little more involved. So they're going to need him for this one for sure.
As you read my notes for the questions that I'm asking you here, Laurel Failer from the Queen City Press, full disclosure, we do support Laurel's work here, here at Office HQ and Office HD. So with Evander integrating in, where is he right now? Is it is the relationship symbiotic? Do they know where Evander wants it and what he wants to do when he's passing? Where is that relationship right now? Or is there still kind of hiccups in the getting to know you phase?
I think they're still getting to know each other. I mean, the problem was he came so late in the preseason, and then, you know, they really were learning on the fly in games while they were playing every other, you know, every 2 to 3 days. They had like one day of training every week. So there wasn't a lot of time on the training grounds to really work on those things. And he's a lot different than Lucho. And, you know, there are some new players here that didn't know Lucho, so it's all new for them. But for the guys that were here, I mean, they were kind of used to Lucho just taking over games at times and dribbling through five defenders and scoring a goal or making something happen. And that's just not what we've seen from Evander yet. And, you know, I think he will be pretty special, and we have seen some really nice moments from him. I just think they need to see him more involved. It just seems like his touches have been so limited. And then even, I know Kevin Denke is not going to be here, but just kind of a picture of the offense right now. Kevin Denke, they spent, you know, $16.2 million on him this offseason. He has 13 touches in the opposition box so far. So definitely need to be getting their biggest players in better positions to make an impact. And then, you know, when they're playing with such a depleted lineup, it's kind of hard to know what to expect as far as seeing some of that progression this week.
Yeah, you mentioned goals, and I would anticipate, I'm with you, where the defensive back lines for both of these teams are going to be somewhat question marks. Atlanta United with Latte Lott, with Miranchuk, with Sabo Lobjanidze. The offense is going to be there in name for Atlanta United. The offense is going to be there in name for FC Cincinnati. So, of course, the more that we're talking up the offense, it probably ends up being a goalless draw, and the defenses stand on their head on Saturday afternoon. When you look at FC Cincinnati here, first month of the season, what are some of your 30,000-foot takeaways? If you were on the tarmac in Covington, Kentucky, and about ready to take off and then see what's going on with FC Cincinnati, what are some of your takeaways from the first month overall?
I think the fans here need to kind of just scrap the last month, really, honestly. I mean, they just weren't prepared for the start of the season with a CONCACAF Champions Cup run. Based on their preseason, they had guys that didn't show up. They had guys that came way late. They, you know, had to make some roster changes late with Lucho departing and Evander coming in. It just, and then the injuries that they, I think, were hoping, like Miazga, would be back by now. So it just hasn't gone to plan so far. And so I think I don't take much from the last month. I think the last month was more their preseason, and now is when it really starts, because now they have full weeks of training. You know, you would like to see more from the offense at this point, just because they did invest $30 million into the attack this offseason. And, you know, Kevin Denke has 4 goals, 5 goal contributions over, what is it, 8 games that he's played. So he's done, you know, it's not like he hasn't done anything, but I think they just would like to see more. You know, they've been scoring a goal, no goal. You know, it's been too sparse in what they've done in the attack. And then the defense, you know, we're seeing some of the same things carry over from last year, whether they struggled defending crosses and set pieces, and that's still a weakness for them. They've been really, for the most part, really good defending one-on-one and handling players in the box. That wasn't maybe the case on Saturday, but they had some mistakes. But yeah, I guess I'm kind of rambling, but just I think that now is kind of when the clock starts on their season, that, you know, they didn't have a normal preseason. This last month ended up being more them learning together like they would have in a normal preseason. And then We'll see kind of how it goes moving forward, but it's probably a good time for Atlanta to be facing this FC Cincinnati team that is still trying to figure things out.
Laurel Feller, Queen City Press, hanging out with us here to give us the early intel on the matchup coming up this weekend. And Laurel, by the way, because the morning show is what the morning show is, there's nothing wrong with rambling, because all we got is space and time to find out what's going on. So stream of consciousness is always welcomed here. That's never a problem. When you mentioned getting to know you, and it's like nothing like getting to know you in a hemispheric competition. What has it been like for the fans to experience, CONCACAF and Champions Cup and all of its different iterations? What has it been like for the fans to experience this kind of thing as well, added to everything else that's coming into this year?
Yeah, I still think a lot of the fans don't understand the significance of Champions Cup, unfortunately. I mean, it's new for Cincinnati as of last year. So, and there's, they end up running against these Liga MX teams, and I think there's some confusion between Champions Cup and Leagues Cup. They kind of view it as an extension. Not everyone. There are some, fans that understand that it's, not the same as Champions League in Europe, but our version of it. So there's some excitement over, just getting there. And then there's some just like, okay, we got to get out of this and focus on MLS. And I think actually that latter take is probably what people should have had in the first place. Just knowing that, I think they're still missing some depth pieces that they need on the roster. So many things happened late in the off season before they really even got a starting lineup together. That it just, like I said, they weren't really ready for that Champions Cup run. So probably should have been, okay, let's just get out of here and focus on league play. But you don't want to give up on a chance at a trophy and a, Club World Cup bid. So, I think that there's still some learning as far as what it really means to get into that competition here.
All things being equal, where FC Cincinnati is concerned, I know that we all sit there and we look at the star power that's attached, and we know the big names that are there, either imported like a Kevin Denke or the star power that's there. In this matchup this weekend against Atlanta United, taking the stars and the big names away from it, if you were to have either FC Cincinnati fans or, frankly, Atlanta United fans who aren't going to be traveling to see this match, who would be someone on that second level of names that we might have been talking about this morning that is key for the success for Pat Noonan this weekend in this match? Who would you say, okay, if you're not going to focus on the big names, I want you to focus on the not so big names. Who's a not so big name or a couple that you say that would be key to a win or getting points out of this matchup this weekend for FC Cincinnati?
Well, I've been kind of highlighting Pavel Buka this year. He is kind of their eight, plays next to Obi Wobodo at the defensive midfield spot. And I did the math, and before Saturday's game, the 101 minutes he hadn't been on the field, FC Cincinnati gave up 6 goals in that time. And it seemed like they took him off, and then all of a sudden goals, started flowing in for the opponent. So he, I think, has been kind of key to just – he's kind of the glue that doesn't get a lot of attention, but he's actually a lot more involved in the attack this year. He, scored some goals early and, just has been, I think he's taken a big step from last year. So he will be a key player in there. And then Lucas Engel, their left wing back, or I guess left fullback now, he's on loan from Middlesbrough, but he started off really strong for FC Cincinnati. He looked really good with the way he can deliver crosses in was encouraging. And then all of a sudden, his crosses just haven't been getting over that last defender or he's hit it, too long. It's been a little off lately. So him getting back to what we saw kind of early, the flashes, I think is going to be important. Cause that's something they need to get the ball in the box. And he is a guy that can do that. That's something that I think they really miss with Matt Miazga being out. They don't have that center back that's just, sprinkling balls in there for guys to run onto. And I think that's something that Lucas Engel can bring. He can also be, he's he's actually their first left wing back in probably since 2022 when Ronald Matarita was here before he got hurt. The only like defensive minded left wing back that they've had, it's mostly been, let's turn these guys, these wingers, into wing backs and see if we can teach them to play defense. Well, he's a guy, and that's what they liked about him, was they can go to a four back line and use him at fullback because he is an actual defender. So I think especially with the center backs not being available, he's going to be a key guy for them.
The necessity being the mother of invention. It's like, okay, so I don't have center backs. What do I do? And so that's where we are. So right now, the juice boxes, as we call them here in the morning show, have FC Cincinnati at a minus 130 on the board. Atlanta United on the road at plus 322. Your 90-minute draw is at plus 284 with FC Cincinnati hosting Atlanta United. How would you gauge the rivalry, the competition, you know, where we all have rivals in Major League Soccer? How would you gauge the competition between these two clubs where natural rivals exist in this part of the country with, say, a Nashville or the Purple Team or Charlotte? Where is Cincinnati and Atlanta as a heated competition when it comes to the rivalry and competition for FC Cincinnati, you think?
I think it's just been a good barometer for FC Cincinnati. I don't know that there's any like hatred or like anything that fans look at as far as like that's a rival we have to beat. But I think for the team, it just seems like whenever they've played Atlanta, they've learned something from it. Like I want to say in 2023, when they won their shield, I feel like the road game at Atlanta was kind of they had a couple losses, went down there and got a result, and it kind of flipped things for them. And I feel like I could probably, you know, looking back, I would probably need to look back at some of I just feel like there's been a lot of situations like that in this rivalry where it's just been an important game for them to kind of set the tone. And that's what they really need right now for Cincinnati. They're coming off two straight losses with the loss to Tigres and then Charlotte on Saturday, and they need something to feel good about. And you know, Atlanta is, you know, even though they're missing a lot of their defense and midfield, there's still some quality players on the field, and so I feel like this could be kind of a tone setter for them.
No doubt about it. All right, for those that do not know your work at Queen City Press and queencitypress.net, if you would please, before you go and head to practice, please cut the promo so folks know where to follow your work and see what you're up to on a daily basis.
Yeah, so I am Queen City Press on Patreon. So all my content goes through that creator content platform. So patreon.com/Queen City Press, or I also have a WordPress version of it at queencitypress.net. I need to get that .com, but someone's hanging on to it. So yeah. And then I'm on social media just under my name. You guys can see it on the YouTube feed here, Laurel Failer on Twitter. And then I'm on Blue Sky. I'm on Instagram, but I don't do much with it. So, Queen City Press also, I'm more active just on my individual name. So, come find me there.
Exactly. So I need to follow you on Blue Sky now. As always, Laurel, feel free to crash whenever you have something on your mind. I'm planning on turning the final hour on Fridays, the 10 a.m. to 11 a.m. is basically a free-for-all, where if anybody wants to hop in, say their piece for 2 minutes and get out, or 5 minutes or whatever, then they can. It's just like pop in, you come in, you say hi, then you leave. So I'm debating that for 10 o'clock hour on Friday. If you're ever free, you want to sit there and come in and point fingers and sit there and go, this is what's going on, here's my update, and all that kind of stuff. As always, thanks for dropping by. We thank you for engaging in safe guesting. Please enjoy practice, and we will catch up with you soon. Thanks for all that you do up there in Cincinnati, and thanks for hanging out on the morning show.
Thank you. And if I can hop on Friday with any updates, I'll try to do that. But
absolutely. Crash the party. That link that you have is universal. That gets you into the studio, so just click on that. You can come in and crash and sit there and wave your hand and sit there and go, I have something, and then you can talk.
Okay, sounds right. Good. Thank you so much.
Where'd you get those shoes? Easy. They're from DSW, because DSW has the exact right shoes for whatever you're into right now. You know, like the sneakers that make office hours feel like happy hour, the boots that turn grocery aisles into runways, and all the styles that show off the many sides of you, from daydreamer to multitasker and everything in between, because you do it all in really great shoes. Find a shoe for every you at your DSW store or DSW.com.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. Indeed sponsored jobs help you stand out and hire fast. With sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. And it makes a huge difference. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Plus, with Indeed sponsored jobs, there are no monthly subscriptions, no long-term contracts, and you only pay for results. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/listen. Just go to Indeed.com/listen right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/listen. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
And now, two pigeons who can't believe how good humans have it with DirecTV.
These humans are hopping from streaming apps to live sports without batting a wing.
All from the DirecTV home screen.
With just one click, you could be watching a baseball game, a movie on Netflix,
or a critically acclaimed documentary.
You watch documentaries?
I love the ones that leave you with a question.
What?
Exactly.
DirecTV, a better way to watch whatever you want to watch. Visit DirecTV.com.
Internet-connected Gemini device, separate Netflix membership, and additional paid subscriptions required for third-party apps.
Hey, it's Jim Costa with Cash the Ticket. It's March, so Mike Valeni and I are all over the tournament again this year. There's just nothing like betting in March. Breakdowns of every region and every game. From conference tournaments to the Final Horn, we'll have the picks and the plays on every single game. Cinderella spotlights, upset alerts, and some of that value for the last team standing. It's tourney time, so hunker down and bet the board with us. Subscribe and listen to Cash the Ticket in the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Traditionally, we try to catch up with our guests when it comes to the opposition for Atlanta United. We'll try to catch up with them early in the week, maybe later in the week, have the opportunity to catch up with them more than once to find out how things have progressed here on SDHAM. Once again, SDHAM on the Soccer Down Here YouTube channel, on the 280 character app on X and on Twitch that is live Monday through Friday, 9:05 a.m. since we believe in Turner time until after 11 o'clock. Traditionally, 11:05 is our wall for those that want to program us for 2 hours, but sometimes information and conversation carry us past the two-hour mark, and we go until we've exhausted all of our resources on a Monday through a Friday. So, once again, Laurel Failer, one of our experts when it comes to local markets from Queen City Press in Cincinnati. Then you have news that breaks. And this past week, the USL decided that they were going to institute a pro-rel model, promotion and relegation model, as a part of their collective future. And it is looking like, say, 2027 and 2028, that would be having the third element that's attached to their framework, the first division clubs that would be added to the USL framework. Then they would have that first division element of all of the new clubs that want to join in, the USL Championship and USL League One. We decided to give a call to Statesboro, Georgia, and catch up with one of the markets in USL League One and find out what the response was and what the response is and the work that needs to be done and the challenges. For that, we caught up with our friend Darren Van Tassel, co-owner and president of South Georgia Tormenta, someone whom we've seen grow as a franchise and grow into USL and be a part of USL League One. So here's our conversation with Darren Van Tassel about what the USL has decided and the steps that need to be taken from here.
He is the man about town, and he's on a match day, and he has graciously said that, yeah, I'll come on, but probably because it's early enough in a match day where he can sit there and it's like, yeah, I think I can swing it. So for this, we go down to Statesboro and catch up with a friend of the network, Darren Van Tassel in South Georgia Tormenta, and find out what's going on with the buzz of the announcement where USL has decided in a couple of years, DVT, that it's going to be pro rel on the clock. Has it sunk in yet?
About that.
Has it sunk in?
About that. You know, the conversation moves from people like you and I talking about it privately to league owners talking about it to I see it on Galazzo and ESPN last night. So we've got people's attention. Mm-hmm. Now our goal is to do the next part, and we'll dive into the work. Listen, there's plenty of details. We're going to get some things wrong on all this, and it's just a fun announcement. It's a great announcement, and I think our league and I think the sport needs it. It's time. You know, let's go. It's not going to be without some challenges, but it's got giant upsides.
Well, and you mentioned that, and I know that a lot of folks they gravitated toward the announcement, but I think the biggest thing is that you still kind of have to use your first time out here on the day and go, this isn't something that's happening tomorrow. We've been talking about
right.
it 4 or 5 years, but we still have another couple, and there are some dominoes that have to fall in place with the proposed Division I league, so you have the three steps that are there. This isn't something that's happening tomorrow, even though there's been all of this talk that it's been coming.
That's right, and we can't get to the next steps unless we had the announcement, when we had the vote. Listen, I give the league some credit. The league put structures together for us, but this was really the owners that pushed it through. It was owner-led. And it took some time to get to it. It's a big shift, but I think fans are going to gravitate towards it. For soccer fans that this matters to it, it's a big deal. For future fans that they don't know about it, I do think the umbrella opens up a bit more where we get to get some of those folks in too. But listen, I think it beats the status quo, and we didn't want to stick with the status quo. I think sports all over our professional landscape in the United States, whether it's baseball with a pitch clock, whether it's football, American football changing kickoffs, and all the things that go on the NBA. It was our turn as pro soccer to do something. And it was something that I think we've just been missing from day one. So listen, this is a fun and exciting time for us. It's happening in the middle of March Madness. It's happening in the middle of the Open Cup. The timing's perfect. Mm. Give us a couple of years to, for the first teams to get promoted and relegated, and then we'll get even more attention.
And then you had, like I've mentioned to you in the past and publicly, I've said, I'm just waiting for that first owner to sit there and have the Veruca Salt moment or the Chappelle Show, Rick James moment on the sofa, where you're just kind of going like this, no. But you got to deal with the consequences here.
Yeah.
You said it passed supermajority. This wasn't something where there was infighting or anything like that. So supermajority, I think, is big. I'm just still waiting for the trepidation for the owners. It's like, oh, crap, we really have to focus on staying up in our league now.
Well, you've got to play better. You've got to play well in this system. And I think some of us were wanting to make sure that message was also sent. You've got to play well. This is, we're keeping scores and we want to put our best foot forward. Listen, in our own club, we've got to do better with our own ticket sales and get stadiums finished. And those are challenges that we're up for. Every club gets to do this their own way, but a path is there. If you're part of the USL, the path exists. And listen, we're in celebratory mode. We got an Open Cup game tonight. I don't want to shift it off of Pro Rel too soon, but I've been watching these Open Cup matches, John, and the amateur teams are playing. I mean, they have put some squads together and they've really been testing the pro teams in this first round. So you're right. As soon as we get done here, I need to get my attention turned to game day. But back to Pro Rel, this is fun. This is exciting stuff. We've been hoping for it. And listen, soccer fans, give us a chance to make some mistakes along the way. But I think there's going to be some real interesting stuff that gets proposed, and we'll vote on again as owners. And here we go.
When it comes to the economics of it, I think that's probably one of the things that I know that you, as an owner and a steward of the game, and knowing that this is the next step in this for USL, for everyone that you associate with,
for me, obviously, it
was stuff that you had mentioned yesterday, where there are things within USL that have to improve to be ready for this from on the field and off the field. And I think that, we sit there and you don't have to get bogged down in market size to sit there and say, well, obviously, you know, well, they're, you know, they're the smallest market of whatever. They're obviously going to be behind the proverbial eight ball from the beginning. That's not necessarily the case. It's how you invest from this moment forward and how you want to tackle what's going on to determine your own viability. This isn't something where throwing money at a problem is going to be, or the next challenge is going to be, the absolute solution. It's how you navigate that to get to have the economics so you can survive, I think, is probably the biggest thing here.
Let's just kind of take a step back here. We are in a league right now. It's 2025. Mm-hmm. We've got to win games. We got to put a good product on the field. We got to sell tickets, and we're winning championships. Yeah. And we're going to try to do the same thing in 26.
Right.
By the time we get to 27, I think, and by the way, I'm talking as me, not as a member of the sporting committee of the USL. By the time we get to 27, that's probably our first shot at, do we get ourselves, you know, aligned for what's next? Don't know. It's too early to know those things. But if you win, there's going to be prize money. If you move up to help handle what some of those new expenses will be, it's up to clubs to decide what their contracts are with players. That's no different.
Right.
If people want to spend a lot of money and they spend less money, I mean, that's the proverbial challenge every owner in sports has, where you're the Miami Marlins or the New York Yankees. But so that's no different. It's just a different scale. This is not recreation leagues where it's just all about participation. So I think this is where clubs have to be smart. We've got to run our businesses better. I've certainly got to do that with our own club in terms of what we're doing here. So we've got to get smarter. You've got to build sustainable stadiums and stadium-centered districts, which is what we're doing here. That's how we think we'll protect ourselves and be able to handle the finances. But, yeah, the finances are real, but we're playing pro soccer. No one walked into this with an idea that we weren't. And getting positioned for what's next is what we've asked of ourselves. So we need fans to help us with that, because we've got to have stadiums that are filled. Listen, I don't speak for U.S. soccer on these things, but as we go through and what we look at what the definitions are, first division, second division, third division, those are important part of sanctioning. And, you know, I did that a lot when I was part of the International Baseball Federation. So I have some sense of how all that works. The what those become in a system where teams are going to be able to move up and down based on meritocracy.
Yeah.
I think U.S. soccer is willing to join us on that adventure and think about how that, what that looks like. You know, I would much rather see X percentage of stadiums filled than have stadiums with a certain size in them, for example. I just think it's more fun. But, you know, I'm not on the U.S. Soccer Sanctioning Committee. We'll see. I just think there's some fluidity that's coming. We've got some time to figure it out. We've got a lot of our own infrastructure to build and put in place, which we're well underway with that. We've got a lot of the retail parts of the stadium development done and getting going on some of the housing pieces that are there too. So, you know, every club's got its own stories to do it. And I don't know that that part's different. What's different is you're going to get rewarded if you win, and you get some new people to play on a schedule. Let's go do it.
How much convincing do you think you need to do when it comes to the footprint, the community, possible sponsors? Because, you know, here in the United States, unless, you know, if you're a fan of leagues overseas, if you're a fan of leagues, you know, in Central and South America, you know about promotion relegation, you know about the second divisions in all of these different countries. Here in the United States, you know, the consistency of, okay, we're going to have this league, it's going to be in this manner, and we're going to do the same thing next year. It's what folks are used to. You know, it's part of the established, sure, I guess, DNA of what's going on. You know, the folks across the parkway that play on a different, you know, football Saturday, there's no promotion relegation there, where if they did well, they could drop into the ACC or the SEC or something like that. They're just used to either being in Division I AA or they're being in the Fun Belt. There's no up and down there. How much convincing do you think you're going to have to sit there and mention to your fan base and to those in and around the communities that could be a part of this in various different ways about this being a possibility of a new normal?
I think soccer one-on-one is already a challenge for us. This just gets us to add to what the next chapter of that soccer 101 class looks like. Listen, we already play in different tournaments while we're going on with the regular season. Nobody else does that in pro sports in our country, although the NBA has, you know, showed us a little bit of something and connected it to the regular season. So it's a different piece. I think it's a fun one to take on. Yes, yes, absolutely. There's some education to help out with the casual fan and the super sports fan, but let's go do it. Let's take it on. I don't think there's much education to the soccer fan. Now, I want to get our stadium next phases done so people don't feel like they're coming to a construction site. That's going to be fun for us, but that's a Tormenta story.
Yeah.
We're part of a league that's given us a pathway to move forward. And if you're already a part of what we're doing and a sponsor and a fan, great. If the next phase of what's coming down the stretch, whether it's our things we're building at Tormenta, much less the league pathway that's going on, if that makes it more interesting, great. But I do think it does resonate when folks feel that, you know, this is not just something in just our area, but it's connected to things that are more global and national. I mean, both of those things. Well, it resonates with me. Maybe it won't resonate with others, but I think that's a legitimizer that we're all going to benefit from. And listen, I don't want to ever be in that game at the end of the season that the winner doesn't get relegated, but what a match that will be. I will be tuning in. I hope I'm not there as an owner.
Where is the stadium project right now when it comes to, you know, you mentioned the commercial component that's there. You're working on the residential component. Where is the stadium component right now in the process of its build?
Yeah, we've gotten a lot of the retail almost completely buttoned up now, from Publix down to Chick-fil-A and a whole bunch of things in between, and moving on the next pieces on some of the residential development. And then, listen, I expect a very active construction year at the stadium this year. And, you know, fans that are watching on TV who give us, you know, fun about our dirt piles, those are fun. Those are our Red Rocks moments. It's good. Listen, it's all coming. It's taken all, the process has been far more lengthier than we ever wanted it to be, but it's coming, and it allows us to have the kind of facility that lets us dive right into, you know, promotion, relegation along the way. Listen, right now we can only be promoted, so this is a pretty good deal for us.
I was going to say, it's like, yeah, you're sitting there and it's like pressure's on everybody else right now. It's like,
yeah,
you know, we're in League One, and it's on the rest of y'all to sit there. It's on the challenge is on you to assemble a product and a property in a three-dimensional sense, not just on the field, but off.
Mm-hmm.
So you can be ready for that promotion and play well within your league and get ready. When you look at USL League One this year, you lose some pieces. You've added some pieces. Some pieces have already said they're coming in. When you look at, once again, the continued growth of USL League One, you're starting to get the Northeastern footprint, you know, worked out with some franchises there. You did lose some pieces out west, but once again, you bring in AV Alta. They're a part of building that Western footprint, but the Southeast continues to add. Sarasota's on its way in. FC Naples is already established. Those two teams have already had their own first little street fight in Open Cup, where you almost had two fights and a bunch of red cards at the end of
that game. Yeah.
A match where it was 1-0, then it was 1-1 with three to go, and then you end up with a 2-1 with Naples. When you look at the growth of USL League One to prepare itself as a part of this idea for promotion relegation, where do you see USL League One right now?
Well, I think it's the most exciting league in the United States, quite frankly. We're here to win and support our communities. We're here to develop players. And once the system is fully in place, we can put together a team that can, you know, maybe climb ladders as well. There's a lot of teams coming into our league. I think even next year, we may be in an east-west sort of divide. That's got to come for us. We need, and listen, is there ultimately three and four divisions in League One. Maybe we got to have enough teams to do that. I do think we're not far off from, you know, a League One. By far off, I mean, you know, is listen, I don't think promotion and relegation is far off. So forgive me for my timeline. But, you know, 5 years out, I think we're at a league that has, you know, 36 teams in it, maybe, in League One. I think the championship probably gets to be about 24, 26. And, you know, the first division, which if they don't call it the Premier Division, I don't know where else it's going to be called, but I haven't heard that yet. That's a number that'll stay national. I think that's how we've talked about promotion relegation happening. And once we kind of get the dust settled, all new teams are going to come in through League One and have to fight their way up to the top. Now we got to get a first division that's saturated to do that. And that's going to involve some new folks, but you know, how that works, I don't know. I don't know which existing USL championship teams would like to make the jump. I mean, theoretically, a League One team could make the jump. None of us are openly talking about those things, you know, meeting those standards. So I think that there's some out of the championship. Quite frankly, I think most of them are going to be new franchises, if I had to guess along the way. But we'll see. I think the next 6 months are going to offer a lot of intel on what's next. And here we go. But we had to get an announcement out. And to do it, we had to take a vote. And when it came time to do it, our ownership group moved quickly and they moved swiftly, but they did not move recklessly. And I applaud us all for getting ready when it was time to do it.
Darren Van Tassel, president, co-owner of South Georgia Tormenta, hanging out with us here to discuss the USL, the Pro Rel announcement, Open Cup, all the things about that's going on right now in Statesboro with Tormenta here for the 2025 season. Another couple of minutes, because I know you're on a match day, and that's my next question. Since you're on a match day, you're an Open Cup, we kind of have already kind of alluded to the chaos that is there. You can't sleep on folks. El Fadalito last night, no. NPSL, they went up and took Rail Monarchs to the extra 30. They got the Dukes, so your NPSL reigning champs have made it through. You can't sleep on what's going to happen tonight there in Statesboro with your first matchup.
Thankfully, our club, and if you have a club run by Ian Cameron as our as our head coach, the gaffer does not, there's no time taken off. So there is no sense at all about amongst our players, amongst our staff. Folks are hungry. This is a hungry team. We did not perform well last year, and so we've been hungry for a while. And hopefully that will be able to continue to help us grow and crystallize where we are this season. So Harbor City, listen, they're going to give us their best shot. We're going to give them their best shot. It's the best part of the Open Cup. You know, let's go. But I can promise you it won't be from lack of preparation or understanding how important this game is, from our side.
No doubt about it. For those who,
by the way, soccer in this country has gotten so much better. I mean, everybody's good. There are good players at all levels. The Open Cup gets to show us once again just how much that exists.
And you sit there and you go, "Oh, I think that might work here." And so that way, it's the financials that are attached to all of that. Once again, you sit there and you look at a player maybe at a Soda City who caused a great deal of chaos in the UPSL as they were chasing after a championship. You said, "Oh, I like that." And then that helps out Soda City, and that helps out the UPSL, and that helps out, you know, their league. And then you sit there and, Harbor City might have somebody. So it's all the symbiotic relationships that we see when it comes to the Open Cup being that door that opens up to talent that you once again may not.
Isn't it a great tournament? It a great tournament? We should let's just keep celebrating it. We need to win, and I'll be listen, nobody wants to get put out early in the Open Cup, but it is such it touches on all the things that are right about sporting events.
All right. So cut the promo for me tonight. Match time, all the things when it comes to what's going on with Tormenta and Open Cup and next home dates in League One and all that stuff.
Yeah, 7 o'clock tonight. Harbor City FC from Florida will be making the trek up. They're in their preseason. Getting ready to start. We've got a couple games under our belt, but it's still early. So this one will be a good time. 7 o'clock start. I think Open Cup folks got everything going on YouTube this particular time. And then we get our old nemesis, Union Omaha, the champs, the defending champs, in Statesboro next Saturday. Last year, they got to celebrate winning the regular season on our field. They had a lot of champagne. I think there were 36 bottles.
Wow.
So nobody's keeping score.
No.
And it's a club that has given us fits with time. So anyway, that's what's next on the lineup. It's spring break here in Statesboro. So we've got almost 30,000 Georgia Southern University students not here. So we've got to press our buttons even more to really pull the folks together. But the weather looks pretty good. I think a little rain around lunchtime, and it looks like some winds are going to come in. So it could be a pretty windy game. I think whoever wins the coin toss should get the win for the first half and try to score early.
Yep, I think
my breakdown.
Yeah, I think that's what's going to go down. Darren, as always, thank you for your candor. Thank you for opening up the door so folks can understand what's going on, especially when all they hear about is a meeting behind closed doors and ABCD&E happened. As always, thanks for dropping by.
Yeah, bring me on anytime. We'll keep talking about the pro rel as much as we can be made public. And listen, right here in my room, I keep the fire alarm right there just in case we ever have to pull it.
As always, my friend, great to see you. Stay away from the fire alarm, sir.
Yeah, all right. Be well.
Once again, great to catch up with Darren, one of our great resources when it comes to the birth of a franchise and what you're looking to learn as you continue to grow in USL League One. So USL League One as a part of the USL framework, looking at the promotion relegation model coming up in a couple of years' time. So we reached out to DBT and got his thoughts about how things are going to be impacted in Statesboro as we go. Once again, I'm John Nelson here, the host of SDHAM, Monday through Friday on the Soccer Down Here Network. SDH Network broadcasting live, 9:05 until after 11 o'clock Eastern time, Monday through Friday. Bunch of guests, bunch of analysis, getting you ready for everything that goes on. All of your AM news, news that you might have missed, guests and opinion that will carry you into your day when it comes to the world of soccer. And part of that is on Fridays when they are not globetrotting around the planet. Our friends Greg Garza and Michael Parkhurst, two legends from Atlanta United who have experience on the national team level, playing internationally and playing in Major League Soccer, they come by for what we call the Friday Free Kick. And in that, we look at the issues of the day. We do discuss Atlanta United on occasion. We do discuss the national team or whatever's going on in the world of soccer. We ask for their thoughts on that. But at the same time, we apply those thoughts to what they're doing with their time right now with Beyond Goals Mentoring, and how they get to impact their more than 200 mentees as they try to give back to the game through their holistic approach in looking at the whole individual and their mentoring aspects therein. So here is one of the times that we get to catch up with Michael Parkhurst, and we cover a variety of topics, everything from what happened on Thursday night involving the national team to mentoring and how the same topics can apply to who they get to break up the game with on a daily basis. So here's a part of our Friday Free Kick conversation with Michael Parkhurst and Beyond Goals Mentoring. All right, so let's we yield the floor and we bring in Michael Parkhurst as Bart will now go into listener mode. Yeah, that's the look I was kind of anticipating, sir.
Morning, John.
Yeah. Morning, Cap. Yeah, we got some salty folks after what happened last night out at SoFi. First and foremost, let me go back. Did you watch said match last night?
Yeah, I watched most of it. I missed a little bit in the beginning.
And your thoughts, sir, question mark?
Shocked. Shocked, but not shocked, I guess.
Okay.
I think that obviously we were the better team most of the game. I mean, we create chances, have opportunities, and you don't finish them. And, you know, we've all heard the story before. We've all seen it play out before. So, yeah, I think it's frustrating. I say shocked because it just seemed like Panama didn't even have an opportunity. So it was like, and then he sticks it side netting when he gets an opportunity, and that's incredible. So yeah, just shocked that it went in, and that like, wow, we're actually going to lose this game. Cause no part of me ever thought like, oh, we're going to lose this game. I didn't think the performance was terrible. But good performances don't always lead to good results. And, these are good lessons that we have to learn. I mean, of course I wish we got the opportunity to play Mexico because we need big games going into the World Cup, especially without qualifying. But, I guess I always look at it glass half full.
when a team is coming into a match and it's not, I mean, it's not quite the U-12 pitch at Yankee Stadium, but it ain't quite, you know, the wide track stadia that you would go up against in, say, in some CONCACAF venue. When you know a team is going to go 5-4-1, when you know that it's a tighter place than normal, how much of a challenge is it to break something down? Traditionally, you know, when they're going to put 19 behind the ball anyway, it's going to be a challenge. But when they put 19 behind the ball and they're playing a 5-4-1 on a shorter pitch, how much added pressure is that to try to break something like that down, especially when you're not scoring later and later and later in a match?
Yeah, that's the key, right? It becomes very, very difficult the longer it goes. And, you know, it's difficult to play against those teams. There's no doubt about it. And, you know, I always used to view it like if we are struggling, right, at some point, or if we're struggling, stop pressing, come back to our own half, let them have the ball, and try and counterattack. Now, we were creating chances last night, so I'm not saying that's what we needed to do. But, yeah, it's challenging. And, you know, I think that's where you have to just put pressure on teams. And, you know, that we always used to say pressure burst pipes. So balls in the box and winning second balls, and it doesn't always have to be pretty. And you fight for a knockdown and you get one, or you score one off a set piece, and then things open up a little bit. And then you can be patient, and they'll have to eventually come out. But obviously we never got that, but it's challenging. And, you know, the smaller field makes it even more challenging, but, hey, they're not the only team that's ever sat back against the national team. So, and surely it was expected. So, yeah, no excuses, honestly.
No, I know we were also, I played the Tony Meola sound from last night, or at least part of it, because it was a good 5-minute conversation where Tony was looking at Matt Turner and saying, you know, you gotta have that one. Much like the forwards, you gotta have those opportunities. You've got to create those opportunities. So Tony wasn't blaming Matt specifically. There was a lot of that to go around, but in that instance, I understood what Matt was doing positionally, and the defense kind of just let Waterman kind of do his thing toward the end, and it seems like a bunch of different things kind of cascaded into one moment where it just kind of just goes past Matt and into the back of the net for a loss.
Yeah, and I'm trying to take another look at it right now, but that's probably about the volume you heard. And yeah, I agree. You know, I think it's easy for us to say, hey, you're 2 feet to the left instead of 2 feet to the right, and all these things. But yeah, I think there was a little bit of miscommunication on the back line. You know, it seemed like Scally had gone with his guy and stepped up. Stryker pulls out wide. Tim Ream doesn't want to get sucked out there. You know, Scally doesn't know that the guy's running behind him, and now he's got a free shot inside the 18. So, yeah, definitely a little bit of miscommunication in that instance, and you pay the price. And these little moments, you know, it's just unbelievable. And this is the difference between us having a successful World Cup and not, right? You know, say you play Panama, or I guess I don't know if we could, but you play the worst team in your group, and you lose 1-0, even though you dominate the game, that's it. That could be your World Cup over, right? You go 1-1-1, and you're just out. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, that's a reality. And, you know, I hope that this group kind of understands that moving forward, because, you know, there are certain games you can't lose, and this is one of them.
Were you in a room by yourself watching this match? Were you with family? Was Deacon having to listen to yelling? What was the situation?
I actually watched it on the Spanish channel because I enjoy that sometimes.
I can relate. Yeah.
So Deacon was around. Kids were one was at baseball practice. One was just getting home from softball practice. So they were kind of doing their own thing, so nobody else was watching or intrigued or anything. So
I was just checking, because, you know, there are times when we are in our environments, and if you're by yourself in an office and you scream at the top of your lungs, then the next thing is for everybody else to sit there and go, well, what happened? And then you're cursing at the television. I didn't know what the dynamic was last night.
Yeah, I don't find myself getting to that level right now. I will probably in the World Cup, but even last night where that goal went in, it was just like Wow. Did that just go in? Does that count? Did we just lose this game?
Yeah.
Not like upset or mad or frustrated or anything, kind of just like dumbfounded, I guess. So yeah.
When you have conversations with mentees about taking care of business, in whatever form that is, I mean, things that you should be able to do and do them, and then they don't. How do you have these conversations about understanding that moments like this happen and try to prevent the moments like this from continuing to happen to where once is yeah and okay, but you don't turn it into a trend? Do you talk about controlling mistakes and getting over mistakes and how to get past it and how to improve from situations?
Oh, totally. Yeah, it's one of the biggest things we talk about because, you know, it affects athletes in every sport at every level. And, you know, with the younger generation specifically, we talk a lot about expectations going into it, right? And we say, you need to expect that you're going to make mistakes. That way, when you do make a mistake, you're not surprised, you're not shocked, you're not disappointed in the moment, right? We can analyze things afterwards and we can be disappointed in a mistake or performance or whatever, right? But in the moment, there's no time for those things, not in soccer anyways. So if we know that we're going to make mistakes, right, we can't control what just happened, right? It's gone. Well, all we can control is the reaction. And so if we can let go of that as soon as it happens and just control the reaction, that's the best we can do in that moment. And usually the mistake doesn't matter if the reaction's good. You know, most times you can make up for it. Every now and then, of course, you can't. It ends up in the back of the net and you try and make up for it later in the game. But most of the time we can. So yeah, overcoming those things is critical. You know, game to game is a little bit more challenging, but in game for sure is a lot based on expectations. And we especially the attacking players, we say, hey, make a few mistakes, please. Because if you're not trying to have an effect on the game. Right? You don't want your number 10, your strikers and your wingers to have 100% pass completion or anything like that, right? That's not how you're going to win and showcase and do really well, right? Go one-on-one, take shots, try and play through balls, all those things. And when you do those things, you're going to make mistakes.
How difficult is it, though, to develop short-term memory regardless of what position you're in? I mean, I would imagine that if you're up top, you know that you're up there to put the ball in the back of the net and you're up there to have the confidence to do it. You know, when you're more of a defensive posture, it's almost, I would think, amplified. The mistakes could be amplified, whether it's defense or keeper or whatever. Is it easier for attackers to have short-term memory, or is it easier for defenders and keepers to have a short-term memory to continue to learn and proceed from a mistake?
It should be easier for attackers, just because, you know, one goal can really make up for four missed chances. You know, even last night, you know, with Agüimón, if he finishes the second one, nobody remembers that he missed the first one.
True.
You know, two massive chances. But I think for defenders, it's a little bit more challenging sometimes because, you know, like what you said, usually the mistakes are punished more often and they're just more noticeable. They're more present, right? So yeah, as a defender, it can be a little bit more challenging because you can play a really, really good game for 89 and 58 seconds. And those 2 seconds you make a big mistake and you lose 1-0. Now all of a sudden everybody's looking at you like, man, how could you have made that mistake? So it's definitely a little more challenging for defenders than attackers.
Then how do you keep from turning it into quicksand, basically, where if you make a mistake and another, I feel like I'm quoting Shane Falco from The Replacements. You know, it's like you try to avoid quicksand. You make one mistake, you make another and another, and you just feel like you're sinking. How do you, I guess, you know, we've gotten into the prevention of that, but how do you pull yourself out of that quicksand? Is it one moment or is it a series of moments to develop confidence? Or does it depend on the individual where somebody could have that one moment and they're back up and running and then someone's got to sit there and have a couple of reinforcements before they feel comfortable all over again?
Yeah, it's really on the individual. But of course, there's things that we try and institute that help out. And, you know, it's a lot of it based on experience. Have I lost a couple nights of sleeps throughout my career when I played a really good game but made a mistake and we gave up a goal? Yeah, of course. And so we try and help our athletes really focus on what did you do well today? Right. I know that you probably did some bad things. What did you do well coming out of the game? Right. And trying to focus on our positives. It's easier said than done. You know, if you make a mistake early in the game, you come back from it. That's a lot easier. Right. If last night, say that ball went through Matt Turner's legs or Scally got nutmegged and they scored a goal, right, at the last minute, that's a lot more challenging, right? Because now you got to sleep on it. Now you can't really make up for it until you get another opportunity on the field. So that can be a little bit more challenging. That becomes tough. And we just, hey, you can control what you can control. Mistakes are going to be made. And hopefully you've got some good teammates that can rally around you and really pick you up in those moments.
When you have, you know, when you're in one of those kinds of moments and you're trying to dust yourself off in this, what was it for you, or was it, or did your attitude change over time when it came to turning off a mistake and putting it behind you? Did you at first, I guess, when you were younger, did you kick yourself longer? Did you get over it over time? Did you still kick yourself the constant rate as you were still a professional? How did your level of adjustment go? Did you beat yourself up as much as you did earlier in your career, later in your career, is I guess what I'm asking.
Not as much.
Okay.
Not as much. I think that early on in the career, it's a little bit easier to read what people are saying online, to care about such things, to and I think you're still out trying to prove yourself, right? And prove like, oh yeah, that's not me, type thing. Versus, you know, later on in my career, not that I'm not still trying to prove things, but you know, I think you have a little bit more self-confidence and you know, like, hey, I've made these mistakes before. I can bounce back from this. You know, and then you turn the page and you try focus on getting better at training, right? If you don't have another game upcoming, that's the only way you can do it. Honestly, it's tough and it takes experience. There's no doubt about it, right? It's one thing to make a mistake in a game. It's another thing to make a mistake in the Olympics or in a Champions League game. You're representing your country and you make a huge mistake, and now you feel the weight of a lot more. And that's challenging.
Michael Parkhurst at MF Parkhurst on the 280 character app, at BG Mentoring on the 280 character app, beyondgoalsmentoring.com, and all that you and Greg Garza do is fantastic to help the upcoming generations when it comes to understanding all these things in context and ways to proceed through it. And whether it's video or conversation, the whole wide-ranging bit. And that's why we like to have you on here for the Friday Free Kick. Every single Friday that you're not globetrotting for. What are you noshing on there, sir?
I'm not eating anything. I meant to wear something today and I forgot.
Oh, you did? Oh dude. There it is. Adam.
Yeah.
Look at that. There it is. From Olive and York. Right there.
Beautiful.
Did you personalized with the Carolina blue, sir? Can I say that? Actually, the light blue? Do we have to say light blue for you?
Yeah, it's light blue. It's definitely not Carolina blue.
Yeah, so there it is. There's the Kaiser Permanente sponsored Michael Parker's jersey, and we thank you for that because it's very, very cool that you are there to help us out, you and Greg and Beyond Goals and Kaiser, to wear the Olive and York presented Kaiser Permanente SDH jersey to help us out for Soccer for Good here in 2025. That's strong. That's pretty good. I thought you were going to bust out your Rhode Island gear and wear that on the show this morning.
No, sir. No, sir. Way more important than that.
But once again, it's very, I will say this, it's very humbling when someone, you know, cracks open an envelope and you sit there and you flash something like that. And that's very, very, it's very, very humbling. Very, very cool. You've disrupted my train of thought, sir. I hope you're happy.
I am.
Yes. When you have, you know, we talk about moments and we talk about quicksand and we talk about young athletes and we talk about all these things with trying to get over mistakes or get past mistakes. I would think a lot of times it's easier said than done. And you mentioned the context of match versus representing your country and all these kinds of other things. I would imagine, at least, you know, for those of us of a certain age, you know, that were born, you know, after the Industrial Revolution just started happening, that it's probably a little bit more difficult for folks of certain ages to get over things than it is a lot younger folks. Do you find that to be the case where you're having interactions with adults? And adults may act a certain way, but with your mentees, they let things brush off a little better than we would. Or because of social media, is it just as difficult, but in a different way to have things brush off?
Yeah, I think a lot of it is personality as well. How confident is the person? In what way did they make their mistake? Was it in something that they feel comfortable in or not? What were the repercussions from the mistake, you know, those types of things, I think really affect how the person is able to bounce back from things. But yeah, I will say that a lot of the younger generation can bounce back from things pretty quickly. But I also think some of that is based off of how the parents bounce back from things and their reactions to the mistakes and things like that. So I think that we can have a real effect on the next generation, no doubt, as parents and our children's resiliency.
How difficult is it to change a younger person's wiring or their DNA when it comes to stuff like that? Because I would imagine that if you have a student athlete that is incredibly self-conscious, it might take a little more for them to turn it around than, say, someone who is instantly confident. So, I would imagine that you're getting a bunch of different student athletes and a bunch of mentees that come at it from different ways.
Yeah.
How hard is it to sit there, the ones that are less confident, how much of a task is it for you and Greg to try to turn them around and have them understand, yeah, it's okay. It's okay to fail, learn from failing. And they may not buy it initially. They're just like, I don't know. And they're always, sometimes it might be tougher nuts to crack, say.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's slow and steady. It's not going to be overnight. It's not going to be a one conversation. And then all of a sudden they've got a different mentality, right? It's difficult to learn new habits and institute new things. So we'd be patient with our mentees for sure. And we know that it's not easy for kids, especially you're dealing with peer pressure and you want to impress other kids your age. And there's a whole host of things they're going through that have nothing to do with kicking a soccer ball yet affect the confidence on the soccer field. So, it's challenging. There's no doubt about it. But it's not impossible. And we've seen some kids start to change and we do it little by little, right? Just little focusing, little tidbits and little changes to the habits of, okay, what's the first thing I think about when I come off the field? Or what's the first thing I think about when I step onto the field? Little things like that, where you slowly start to change habits.
When you have these, let me phrase it this way. How many mentees do you and Greg currently have? I know the answer is a lot, but can you put a number to it?
Probably 250.
Wow. No, that's cool. That's tremendous. Do you and Greg have individual files on each mentee with, for lack of a better phrase, progressions and growth charts? It's like, okay, first meeting was this. Then, I noticed this. Do you keep notes on all of your mentees, or is it just, how do you guys keep everyone straight so where you're in tune with their learning process going forward?
Yeah, we do keep notes because, it can be challenging, especially if you go 6 weeks, 8 weeks between talking to a mentee. You need a refresher of, okay, where was this athlete at? And we sometimes have crossover, right? An athlete will do a couple sessions with me, a couple sessions with Greg, and we don't want to repeat things. So yeah, we take notes and we share notes. So it's, hey, what did you talk about? And also because we don't have a set curriculum, right? It's not like, hey, session one is this, session two is this, session three is this. So even if Greg's done two sessions with a kid, I don't know what he's talked about, right? So yeah, we keep notes on every athlete that we've spoken to. That way, if I have one of Greg's kids, I shoot him a message. Hey, share that with me, so that, you know, we're on the same page.
Are you able to read Greg's handwriting?
Oh, John, everything's on the computer, John. No handwriting. Although I do think Greg's got good handwriting.
Do you understand his notes? Are the notes like in actual sentence and paragraph forms where you can sit there and take the information and fully understand where he's coming from? Or is it shorthand and you sit there and go, man, what does Garza say here? And you have to dial him up and go, what are you talking about?
That's a good question to ask Greg next time he's on, because he takes really good notes and writes sentences. And I'm more like, hey, you know, two words here, three words there, and like, hey, you know, confidence, and then three other words under confidence, versus Greg will, you know, really have a little more elaborate note than I do. So I think that he gets it, you know, but I think it's also good because, you know, we adapt what we talk about sometimes. And, you know, I for example, I don't know, what was I listening to or reading? I don't even know. The other day, and I heard something or saw something that was really cool. And I'm trying to find the note right here. It was, a person with a positive attitude can affect the group or another person by 15%. But a negative person and approach to thing can affect that same person or group by 30%.
Twice as much impact on a negative.
Yeah. So and we're talking about how valuable it is to be a good teammate and have a positive effect on other people. And also to be aware of said teammates that are, or friends that are having positive or negative effects on you, because the negative effect is so much stronger than the positive effect, which makes sense when we think about, you know, 80% of our thoughts daily are negative. You know, everything negative is way more stronger than it is positive. I've heard that in the past, as far as you have to think about something positively for like 3 or 5 times longer than something negative for it to stick in your brain and impact it as much.
Yeah, I could definitely.
So, you know, we adapt things that we talk about. And so when I read Greg's notes, I can say, oh, shoot, you know, he's talking about something we've never talked about, or, you know, an example or a story or whatever, and then I can implement into mine.
As always, great to catch up with Cap and have the Friday free kick with him and Greg Garza. And reminder, it's at beyondgoalsmentoring.com for everything there involving the Friday free kick and the life as a mentor as they look after their mentees and continue to grow the game. Once again, thanks to Laurel Failer from Queen City Press in Cincinnati. Thanks to Darren Van Tassel at South Georgia Tormenta for his thoughts on the USL decision to go pro rel. Thanks to Michael Parkers and Beyond Goals Mentoring, great partners with us at the SDH Network and contributors to SDH AM when it comes to everything that we do on a weekly basis. And thanks to all of you for hanging out with us, as you always do, when it comes to the best that soccer has to offer on the news side of things. Once again, SDH AM, 9:05 until after 11 o'clock Eastern Time, live on the SDH YouTube channel, on X, and on Twitch. And you can catch it on tape on your favorite podcatchers and on the SDH Network through our head end at Spreaker. Thanks for hanging out with us here on the Off the Woodwork Podcasting Network and on the Odyssey app when it comes to 92.9 The Game here, as we are based in Atlanta, Georgia. For everyone at the SDH Network, Jason Longshore, Madison Cruz, Nick Alifi, Jarrett Smith, and myself, I'm John Nelson. Thanks for hanging out for another go-round of SDH AM. Mucha plata y el plate safe. We'll catch up with you next week.